Welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. This is Greg Voisin, the host of our podcast, and I want to thank all of my listeners who come from around the world to listen to the words of wisdom from our authors. And I'm especially privileged today to have Ram Dass joining us on the line from Maui. And Ram Dass and I are going to be speaking today about love, service, devotion, and the ultimate surrender. This was a series of audio CDs that Ram Dass did in 1974, and they were found they said they were in the Naropa Institute and kind of revived them, didn't they, Ram Dass?
Yeah.
Yep. And so these CDs, which I've listened to, are on the Bhagavad Gita and the Gita, and we're going to be actually speaking with Ram Dass today about many of the aspects of this love, service, and devotion in the ultimate surrender. Now, Ram Dass, the Gita is lovingly called in India the most widely known and best-loved scripture of India. They say that it's concise, profound, poetic, and deeply inspiring, and it has been called the Hindu Bible, as you know. Ram Dass, in the Gita, Arjuna is really the main part of it, is Arjuna is awakening, and that's the major theme, is Arjuna's awakening. In your estimation, and for my listeners, what are some of the most important lessons that Arjuna awakens to through his encounters with Krishna?
Well, Arjuna is a warrior, and Krishna says that neither to kill anybody nor to be killed by anybody is relevant, because in the soul is not at that level. And he's trying to, Krishna, awaken in Arjuna that he shouldn't be taking his role as a warrior. He's taking it too seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna says, really, he should be taking his soul instead of his role. That's the way he's. That's what Krishna's talking about. Krishna is telling Arjuna all the methods of going up the mountain of spirit.
Mm-hmm.
One you can get by your mind, you can get energy, the heart. Arjuna is feeling, since he's taking on in the Gita, he's taking on the other side is his cousins, and he looks across the field at how some of the people that he may have to kill, and he's going to have to kill some of his family, some of his teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the great people. And Krishna says you shouldn't really get upset. They're doing their dharma. You're doing your dharma. You're doing everything the way you're supposed to as a kshatriya, as a warrior. And no matter who kills who, you will get, you'll come out of it great with your soul.
Your ascension, your awakening of your soul. That's what this...
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
In the 11th chapter, Krishna shows Arjuna what Krishna is about, because he's only a friend to Arjuna, and then he is also he's a charioteer for Arjuna. But at one point in the 11th chapter, Krishna shows that his body incorporates everything, and he is indeed God.
Now, one of the things that you mention in these CD tapes that you did in 1976, you state to the listener, and I listened to most of these very intently in preparation for this interview, because it is quite an honor to actually have you on our show, and I just want to acknowledge that and acknowledge your service to the world and to my listeners who are out there today. And it's just truly it's a pleasure for me. But you said to read the Gita three times. You said first as an interesting story, second as if you were Arjuna, and identify with the battleground that Arjuna is dealing with and the conflicts that he's dealing with. And then you said third from the perspective of Krishna. To the listeners and to the audience out there today listening, would you make that same suggestion today in 2011 as you made in 1976 as how one would go about reading the Gita and understanding the Gita from the perspective of Arjuna and Krishna?
Yeah. We are in a kind of turmoil in the world, and this is what Arjuna faces. How you read it as if you were Arjuna, it'll be relevant to this world, but also if you read it as if you were Krishna, that gives you a sense of your Atman, your inner God within you, and every one of your listeners has an inner place of God. We are talking to ourselves.
What do you mean by that, Ram Dass? Because I have actually a specific question about that. You mentioned that when we say namaste, we are honoring the place within where there is only one of us. Me is talking to myself. You say the Atman can you comment on that? Because namaste is truly the greeting to say I'm speaking with myself, correct?
Yeah.
And that is the Atman, right?
That's right. And in fact, it's such a nice greeting for somebody. It's what you call probably our intuition, or the voice within that guides you from inside, that God within. It's consciousness. if you think of the one as the one as consciousness, and then comes in these little consciousnesses, yours and mine, and this means that the one has the perspective of each of us of the universe. Mm. It's like we're fingers of God's consciousness.
But we are God's consciousness. You're saying we're fingers, meaning we are all one, yet we are have an individual expression of the one.
That's right.
Correct?
Yep.
So for my listeners, that's that when we say namaste, we're actually speaking with ourself, but the Atman, the God within, right?
Yep.
Okay. So now, you speak that the main thrust of the Gita is focused on karma yoga, and you spend a lot of time in these CDs talking about karma yoga. And by the way, I loved the dialogue that you had with the students at Naropa Institute who were coming there to study. And it says, what is this karma yoga and why is it so important for my listeners to truly understand not only the karma yoga, but then you talk about the Dharma. So what it is we're here to do and why we're here to do it. And so can you address that for us for a little bit?
Well, karma yoga is really seva. It's service, a compassionate service to God and service to people as God. And yet that is, you take what's in front of you and find a way to express that service. A karma yoga means your karma becomes your yoga.
Mm-hmm.
That means your karma is what's in front of you. It's all in your life. It's all in your incarnation. That's the remains of your old karma from previous
reincarnations.
Yeah.
So you speak a lot about reincarnation on these series as well, and the importance importance of reincarnation. So let's talk about reincarnation as it relates to a karma yoga. So we've all been rebirthed here. You talked about Buddha and the amount of time that it actually potentially takes by putting a scarf over a rock. I remember this distinctly, a mile by a mile by a mile by a mile to actually have that rock worn down. I think that was a great analogy about the time frame, because we, as Westerners, we always want to put a time on things. We seem to want to have a time. I don't think that it's so important that we know how many incarnations we have, but it might be important to know that we have had them, and I think many of us forget them, or we don't remember them. But as we do this deeper work and we understand our karma yoga, isn't the essence of it to actually truly be able to get in touch and then have some wisdom and knowledge as a result? Because wisdom is another thing you speak of very eloquently in these audio CDs that you did in 76 as well. So speak to us about this connection between our reincarnation and karma yoga and our ultimate service work here, because this is about love, service, devotion, and the ultimate surrender.
The present incarnation that you're in now is the result of all of the motives and attitudes and acts in previous incarnations and the early part of this incarnation. All those the Rolling Stones, the motives, and that's how you get your body, your personality, your parents.
Predefined? Predefined?
I can't hear you.
You think it's predefined?
Yeah, it's predefined by your guru and you in Soul Land. it's predefined.
Well, and I personally believe that. I don't know about all of my listeners, but they certainly have an opportunity to explore with an open mind how karma has an effect and how karma yoga, coming to this physical plane of existence and we're on today and the work that we have to do, is truly, as you call, our love, service, and devotion. And I just want to acknowledge you, because if more people came to this physical plane to serve in love and devotion and ultimate surrender, this would be a very harmonious, much more beautiful place to live in.
Oh, it would be incredible. It would be incredible.
Yeah.
If all the people, that's faith in that, in themselves.
Yeah, and that is something that I think many people, as they traverse this journey, the fear, the grips of fear, and I want you to address that a little bit, because what holds most people back, as you would probably attest to, is their fear of the unknown. The ego is speaking to them and it's telling them you can't and you shouldn't. And so it prevents so many people from, you know, even on a personal growth path, from reaching their total human potential and playing everything out here. One thing I love about you is you're somebody who was never afraid to play. You certainly, Ram Dass, spent much of your life and living it to the fullest. And I just, I honor that, because I think that's what people respect in you so much, is that you truly have lived such a full life and are still living a full life, even today at your age, after your stroke and the things you've gone through. And so acknowledgement to you and still getting the word out to people.
It's as if each of us has some dharma to live out, some plan for the life, and inside you react to the world by, yes, that one's dharmic for me, that one's not dharmic for me, I will take that one. And the ego is really the mind, because the ego is who we think we are. Mm-hmm. And if we get the mind, get the, for our identification from the mind to the heart, not the beating heart, but the spiritual heart, which is called the soul. And you can get there by just, the soul is loving awareness, a loving awareness, loving awareness. And if you start by saying, I am loving awareness, I am loving awareness, I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. I am loving awareness. And focus on your heart. You become aware of everything. Things that come in through your eyes, ears. You become aware of the thoughts that spew out of your mind. Most of us, you see, we are identified with our thoughts. But by going down into our awareness, we say, that awareness witnesses our thoughts. It witnesses our incarnation. Like I, down in my heart, I can witness the whole Ram Dass game. It's kind of a fun game.
Yeah.
And I can witness it from there and perceive it from there and control it from there. And I don't have maybe I'll have an angry thought. In my daily life, I'd be angry then. But by bringing my identification with the heart, I am witnessing the anger. All I am is witness. All I've done is watch the anger. And the anger is not me. Not me. So the idea is to bring the identification from the mind to the heart. And then you witness the whole fight as Arjuna is being taught.
So well said. Now, one of the things that you suggest is that the Gita became a revolutionary work of its time, and that it had people questioning the cultural norms. And you provide an example of going against the cultural norms and how this was kind of the melodrama of kind of your personal quest. You put a little story in at this point, and you probably actually even might remember this story. But for my listeners, I want to bring it back up again because I want you to comment on it. It's actually it's a cute little story about you. You talk when you were under the influence of some LSD, and that you were shoveling snow in the middle of the night out in front of your parents' house, when your parents open up the window and yell out the window, Ram Dass, you know, get your butt inside the house. And you look up to your mom and your dad, and you said, and at least this is the way you told the story, you just looked at him and you smiled and you continued to shovel snow. And I presume they closed the window. You didn't tell that story, but you state that the Gita is not about moral law or social duty, but about higher consciousness and our struggle to awaken. What do we have to let go of, Ram Dass, to awaken to this higher consciousness that you speak about here and use this particular example? So what do my listeners, if they're out there listening today, in your estimation, with your wisdom and the travels you've been through, and speaking of your personal karma yoga, what do they need to let go of?
Well, they need to let go of measuring their their behavior on in the eyes of others. That's
number one.
That's number one, and I've felt shoveling snow was inside me, and I was the young buck, and I had the shovel, and I wanted their walk shoveled, and I didn't know that it was the time. 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning.
But you were going to shovel snow anyway, weren't you?
Yeah. And of course, that was the time when I learned that all that year, all the time up until then, I listened to everybody's judgments about me, and I never listened until that moment the things inside that said, "You can shovel snow."
Mm-hmm. And that's what you're telling my listeners is you need to listen inside and shovel your own snow.
That's right.
If you know what I mean. I mean, it's like it's your time to awaken to shoveling your own snow. Now, you stated in this CD series that the moment of awakening, we're faced with this paradox that we're leaving one level of flow and we seem to be going against the current of the next level of flow to get into deeper harmony. How are we like Arjuna in the Gita as we struggle to attain this heightened level of consciousness? So you're saying we're leaving this one level of consciousness and we're now going to another new level of consciousness, but it seems like we're actually going against the flow of this new level of consciousness. How do we get to those newer levels and go beyond what might seem like it's contradictory or it's against the flow?
Look at Arjuna, for example. He grew up in a culture where family was honored, and here he's looking over the enemy. And the enemy is family. And he's really, by the culture, he says, this can't be Dharma. I can't do this. This is going against my role in the culture. When each time in my life that I had to make a decision. I had to make the decision in my heart. And even though the culture was, my parents all were against it. Mm-hmm. And I was to go to medical school, but no, psychology a little more interesting for me.
Mm-hmm.
Then psychology led to psychedelics. Psychedelics was much more interesting than psychology. Then psychedelics. I was a psychedelicist, and then I went to India to. And met my guru, and he was so much more interesting than psychedelics. And I followed my heart each, and here I am. Ram Dass was, yeah.
Yeah. Ram Dass is here now.
Yeah. Now, by the way, here now is a path. And I want people to understand that you can burrow in or go in to the moment, this moment, this moment, and pick and stay in the moment. In the moment, we have no time and space. In the moment, we are infinite. In the moment, we are right there with the One. So as you go through life, see it as moments, 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 and say, this moment, this is moment. And you'll find that the mind is the only, has past and future. The mind, you don't have to worry about past and future. Now, I shouldn't say that. I should say the past and the future is all the moment.
In the moment.
In the moment.
Yeah.
And you come, you stay in, just still, you've got to stay in the moment. Stay. For example, my moment at this moment has my stroke in it, and I know if I go into the past, I can remember having played golf. Now I don't play golf because my legs aren't strong enough. And I'm 80 years old, so what's the future? It's getting old and dying. And those are beautiful things. They are beautiful.
And I think it's the spiritual path that you've been on that has given you the opportunity of acceptance of death and dying as not truly death and dying, but just another incarnation and an opportunity to come back. And, you know, I don't know if Ram Dass is going to do it over again, but he might have an opportunity to come do it. Or maybe you are the ascension one and you're not going to have to do this over again. But, you know, if you do, hey, enjoy the journey, right? You had a beautiful poem in here that I want to cite for my listeners and for your memory. And I want you to comment on it because it truly is at the essence of what you're speaking about in these CDs about love, service, and devotion. But it's where each one of my listeners has to get to, and all of us have to get to. And the poem is this: the freer I get, the higher I go. The higher I go, the more I see. The more I see, the less I know. The less I know, the more I am free. Now, that has got to be one of the best little poems I've ever heard. And I have to admit, Ram Dass, that that's the first time I actually heard that poem. And can you give a little commentary to my listeners about what you mean about them becoming free and knowing less? Because it's almost like your journey as an 80-year-old man. The more you know, the less you know. The less you know, the freer you are.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That the problem is your mind is in boxes of with theories and identification, like that's a tree, and it maybe it's a tree, but it's a manifestation of spirit, and because everything in your mind is categorized, and what it turns out to be is that our minds are the biggest obstacles to the spiritual path. Projections of our mind. All the roles we have. I'm a mother. I'm a father. I'm a doctor. I'm a radio announcer. I'm a man. I'm a woman. I'm a child. Those are all, they're part of this incarnation. But you are a soul. And your soul comes into this incarnation. And you don't have to take the roles too seriously. Too seriously.
Well, that's why that poem says, the less I know, the more I'm free.
That's right.
So don't get too serious about it. For my listeners and even for myself, you know, it's not that important. There isn't anything that's that important. So the last question for you, and I will let you go, and I'll also remind my listeners about the audio cassette tape series, but also you're going to be doing lots of programs coming up. You've got one with Wayne Dyer and Eckhart Tolle. And I want everybody to know to go to ramdas.org. That is the website that kind of has all the things on it. And I want to mention, too, that Ram Dass is also, and I'm going to put this information at our website, Ram Dass, is all of the various charities that you support and foundations you have and the things that people can get involved with through the good works that you've done throughout the years. And if you choose to mention them at the end of our interview here, please feel free to mention anything that you'd like about the things that you are involved with and would like to have my listeners support. But this one last question, you say that Arjuna is faced with this discipline of not being attached to any patterns anywhere. And I look at it as non-attachment to almost our physical world reality. And that this is the way of the Bodhisattva. So in your experience, how for my listeners and for me and in your wisdom, would I let go of these patterns that and overcome the fears to become awakened? If you were to give us one big last dose of super sound wisdom and advice from Ram Dass, what might that be, Ram Dass, to help my listeners and help me as well? I'm on the same path of everybody else here, so I want to know as well.
Love everything, including yourself. That's a good one.
Couldn't be better said. And as a matter of fact, I have this. I'm going to show my listeners Be Loved Now book. It was out here for my preparation. Wonderful book, by the way. Be Here Now, Be Loved Now, Love, Service, Devotion, Ultimate Surrender. Well, would you like to say any kind of words about upcoming events, or just have our listeners go to your website at ramdas.org? Is there anything else that you would like to tell them while you have them captive?
I think they could get the website, all of the information of upcoming and things, and the website is beautifully done. And all of it includes interviews, things about Maharaji, my guru, and Ram Dass. That's R A M D-A-S-S, two S's.
.org.
.org.
Right. And you're also the co-founder of the Prison Ashram Project and the Love Service Remember Foundation, and the author, as we've talked about, of Be Love Now, Be Here Now. Obviously, your bio is up there. I printed the bio off, but for my listeners, the bio is so long, it would have taken the whole time to read Ram Dass's bio. So instead, I chose to do the interview.
Another book that your listeners might be interested in, Still Here.
Still Here.
It's about dying and getting old.
Well, I will certainly put a link to that as well, Ram Dass, so that they have that. And thank you so much for your time this morning. We've been speaking with Ram Dass about his CD series. There's 10 CDs in this from Sounds True called Love, Service, Devotion, and The Ultimate Surrender. And Ram Dass has been speaking with us about these 1974 CDs that were pulled out of the archives from Naropa Institute. And they were truly a pleasure to listen to, Ram Dass. I got so much additional insight by just listening to these CDs. And this isn't a plug for Sounds True or anybody. It truly is just to say, if you really want some insight and wisdom, go pick up a set of the CDs. You can do it through our website. You can do it through Ram Dass's website, or you can just go directly to Sounds True to get a copy of the CDs themselves. So it's been an honor, Ram Dass. I hope we get to do this again. I loved it. And you truly, again, amaze me every time. You're very insightful. Gave me additional thoughts for contemplating here, and I just need to get out of my head. That's all I got to do.
That's, boy, is that good.
I noticed that you tried to do a radio show back sometime when I was reading, and it didn't go over for you, so you stopped the radio show. Is that right?
That's right. I think I had aphasia. You can see my speech stops and things like that. And you can't do a radio show when I started.
Oh, no, I meant about a radio show way back when that I read in your bio that was called Be Here Now. This was before the stroke. This was something you tried to do where? I'm looking here. Like in the 70s or something like that? Yeah, it says 1996, Ram Dass began a radio talk show called Here and Now with Ram Dass. 7 pilot programs were aired in Los Angeles and the Bay Area, and you planned to launch a show on a nationwide basis the following year, but it was not to be.
Because along came my stroke.
Ah, okay. Was that in 76? 96?
Yeah. 96.
Yeah. Okay. So I didn't know that was that far ago. I watched and for my listeners, Fierce Grace is, in my estimation, everybody's got to watch Fierce Grace, Ram Dass. And I want to let my listeners know, go get a copy of Fierce Grace, or go to wherever you go to your local place and rent it, or online or whatever. But Fierce Grace is still being distributed out there all over, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay. Wonderful CD, wonderful documentary. Enjoyed every minute of it. I've enjoyed every minute of being with you. I appreciate the time you've given me. And I hope I can make it over to Maui and go to one of those retreats that you're putting on.
I wish you would do that. And Greg, I'm amazed at how still you are, because I'm looking at you. You just stand there with your hand on your face, And we haven't moved during this whole interview.
Okay? You know what? I think that the Skype thing froze. Now let's see if, am I moving now? Do you see me?
Yeah, now.
Okay. No. Yeah, you know, I think what happened is when I first Skyped it, it probably froze somewhere in between, but I got the audio portion of it anyway. So now when I try and do this video back, what's going to happen is it's going to be one still pose of me while you're moving. That's okay. They came to see you. They didn't come to see me anyway. So
you're just a really meditative person you are.
I was very still. I was listening to every word you were saying, and I was actually. So, well, namaste to you.
I'm thanking you for the service you're doing for humanity. Believe me.
Well, I'm here in service, and I think that when you define your purpose, I, many years ago, like you, defined my purpose as existing to serve, to inspire passion. And for me, biblically, passion meant helping people move from pain and suffering to understanding and knowing. And if I keep my work's path in that same purpose in my life, was to move people out of any pain, out of suffering, out of delusion, into a place of knowing and a place of feeling at peace, I'm doing my work. And that's what I do every day when I interview authors and I speak to them about what they're doing.
Sure. You and I are both in the service of the One.
I am, and I appreciate that. And my wife always asks me, she says, "You're doing beautiful work. Now, can you pay our bills?"
Oh, yeah.
But you know what? I love what I do.
Tell her you're paying your bills in the spirit.
Karmically.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Well, my best to everybody over there in Maui, and I look forward to seeing your session with Eckhart Tolle and all of the other masters that are going to be on that great series that's coming up in October. And enjoy the rest of your day.
You are also.
Namaste.
Blessings to you, too.
Take care. Have a wonderful day.
Beautiful day.